Okay, we're going to return to the subject at hand, which is basic instruction. But you can see that basic instructions aren't so basic. Not if you allow your joy of exploration move into the instructions. If you think of the instructions as being fixed, then you'll be fixed within them. But if you allow them to move into an open range, then they will move in accordance. Your spirit will move in accordance with that. They're quite beautiful. And as I mentioned, because for most of us, there's a period of time in which we focus in on self-care as opposed to the more absolute direction the Dharma points. And because we have to find ourselves, we've had a life for most of us of a lot of pain in which we haven't honored who we were, and in which there's been a lot of self-doubt and self-obsession, self-contraction, and often self-dislike. And so to find out who we are is not opposed to the wonder of who we are. It's in alignment with that. You're never going to accept the fact that you're wondrous until you've accepted the fact that your conditioning has led you astray from that wonder. It's the conditioning that has left the imprints of self-dislike and self-doubt in your system. It's only that. And if we can uproot that conditioning, or at least give it some space so we can hear it, so we can get a sense that it's conditioning and not us, which is huge. But when you realize it's conditioning, then you're willing to move beyond it. In fact, you're happy to move beyond it. So this sense of self-care allows some basic components of ourselves to become ingested that we thought were never possible, like kindness, real kindness. And we see ourselves getting more kind. We see ourselves, our hearts being affected so that we're more tender, that we listen deeper, that we're appreciative and empathetic with people. And these are traits that someone who is self-disdaining may never consider to be their own. And so this movement of self-inclusion into the practice is not counter to the wondrous, inexplicable sense of what this sense of self really is. So self-care is an important, for many people, not all, for many people, a very important component of the spiritual journey. But as I'm prone to do, I like to point beyond self entirely to where this practice is eventually going to direct our attention if we are willing to let it. And so we come back to the basic instructions and begin to see how the basic instructions can lead us through the need to be exact in our instructions and detailed and explicit and contracted around the instructions and getting them right, which is often the opening valley of opening expression of how we relate to them, through self-care and beyond. And so it's the beyond now that I want to start to address. If you don't mind, you just stay with me as best you can on this, because it can get a little bit remote to where your experience may be. But if you listen carefully with wonder, then you will notice that. If you listen with wonder, then the wondrous part of you will be stimulated. And you'll see how much sense this makes in terms of your inevitable journey forward into the unconditioned. So, you know, one of the words that we use early on to describe the meditation is observe. Seems like an innocent word. Although for most of us, we've never realized what observation really is. We know what we think or our judgments within observation, We know what our mind says about what we observe, but the observation itself has never been the focus. Now, the meditation, and this is an interesting point, starts out with two things. It says, sit down. Now pay simple attention to your breath. That's how we usually begin the instructions of meditation. Pay simple attention to the breath. So there's two things going on. There's the breath, and then there's the observation of the breath. And what we begin to realize is that we can't observe the breath because the observation seems to wander everywhere. It seems to wander with every thought, wander, W-A-N-D-R, wander with every thought and with every idea and with every like and every dislike and with every judgment. And so we have to train ourselves to observe, to be steady in our observation. What's really happening is that your observation, which has so long been tied to self-thinking and self-indulgent thinking, that it just gets, those two get meshed together. And so for us, observation is what we think about what we're seeing. But as we begin to practice the meditation where we have this simple attention on our breath, we begin to see that there's a distinct difference between the breath that we see, because it's hard to judge the breath for very long, and the observation that sees the breath. Now, this may be the first time ever that we have noticed two different components. We have the form, the experience we're observing. That's the breath itself. That's form. Any experience, anything that you can see, hear, smell, taste, that's form. That's the formation. And then we have something that's observing the formation, and that in the spiritual journey is called the formless, that which is not an experience. It's observing experience, but it itself is not an experience. And so what we began to do is notice the differentiation between form, the breath, and formless, the observation. And what we're constantly suggested, what the teachers, if they are legitimate teachers, will be suggesting along the way, is that what we're trying to encourage is the formless. We're trying to get more embodied in the formless representation of this than the forms. The forms are really only minorly important in the direction of the spiritual journey. Why do I say that? Because, as the Buddha points out, all forms are impermanent. And it catches our eye after enough observation of form is that they're not, you can't put your happiness on a formation. You can't say that this flower, my garden, my food will give me everlasting happiness because the food spoils, the garden withers, etc. And so it all passes away. So what observation of the form shows us is that it's not something where we want to place our energies. And so there's a retreating, a psychic retreating from embellishing or involving ourselves too deeply in formations. They just aren't worthwhile. They're not worthy of our sustained attention. So then that only leaves one other thing. That leaves the formless. And what we begin to realize with the formless, the observation, is that it is dependable. It's always there. It doesn't have to be encouraged, or it doesn't have to be built upon. It doesn't have to be embellished. And it's reliable. Okay, so now we've got something that far outweighs the forms of life. We have the formlessness of life. Now, with more attention and more observation, what we begin to see is that when we are told to just observe something, say our minds, Well, we can't really, we have some observation of what the mind is doing, but there's a lot of commentary associated with that observation. And the two just seem to be almost synonymous with one another. The relentless narrative through which I'm observing whatever it is I'm told to observe. Say I'm told to observe my thoughts or my emotions, and with that comes the narrator who has a whole history with that emotion and knows all about it and sees how it has arisen in the past, et cetera, et cetera. And so observation is never clear, for most part, is never clear of the narrative. But that's not what the word observe means. The word observe itself is seen without commentary. Observe not through our thoughts, but as itself. And it's often spoken about as seeing what is actually there. In this tradition, seeing what is there, as opposed to what we think about what is there. So how do we separate the observation from the commentary? Okay. The only way we can begin to see is to embellish the seeing more and not the commentary. If we get lost in the commentary and how to get rid of the commentary, we'll just be creating another level of commentary upon the one that's already there and really circumventing the whole process and creating much more complication than success and being able to just observe. So thinking about how we can get rid of the commentary is just more complicating the commentary. It's just, it's not worth doing. It's not even, very quickly you'll realize that that's not the way out of the commentary. And there's not a way out of the mind except by seeing the mind. That's ultimately where we begin to, what we begin to understand, is that the only way that we can leave the mind behind is by observing what the mind is already doing. If we try to go into the mind and force it to end, we're just going to create more of the same. So what is it that can observe the mind? And that's awareness. In an important sutta, the Buddha said, you know, there's only one thing that is not mental, that can be seen, but yet can see every aspect of the mental, and that's awareness. No part of the mind can see the mind because it's all a part of the mind. Awareness, because it's not a part of the mind, can see the entirety of the mind. And so we're trying to figure out, how do I access awareness? I know how to access mindfulness, but the mindfulness has this commentary that chatters its way endlessly, and it's not satisfactory. So then you begin to see that the seeing of the commentary is outside of the commentary, is outside of the mind itself. So if I can observe, if I'm quiet enough, which is the key, because stillness means it's not coming from, stillness is not coming from the mind. My chattering is coming from the mind, thoughts, but not the stillness. If I can be still sufficiently, suddenly the whole mind comes into view. I can see the thoughts arising. I can see emotions. I can see every aspect of the mind without a commentator. Now, we have to be very sincere and serious to be able to do that. But that's how observation, pure observation, because awareness is only sees. It doesn't see with a commentary. And so we have to release all of the mind. Once we release the mind, we release our sense of self. Once we release the sense of self, we abide in wonder. Once we abide in wonder, stillness is there. Once stillness is there, I can see the entire range of all phenomena. And now formlessness takes its mastery over form. Seeing sees form. Form can't see seeing because it's not sensory It's not derived from the senses. It's not mind. But formlessness can see all of the mind, all of the senses. And so that's the switch, the enormous switch that's necessary for us to move this thing into the unconditioned as opposed to the conditioned. So I know that was probably more than what you wanted to hear from me in terms of observation, but I just want to give you a sense of the path forward on this. And it comes from sincerity of the heart. It comes like, I'm tired of just seeing through my commentary. I'm tired of this. What's going on? How come I can't see things as they are, which is what every Dharma teacher has ever said. See things as they are rather than what I comment upon them, what I judge them to be. And that's the way forward that allows. Now, the other expression of early instruction that's equally as difficult is allowance, allow. Now, allowance is to let everything be as it is. I mean, the picture of allowance for me is Christ with his arms outstretched, all inclusively, saying, everybody come, all inclusive, everyone, denying nothing like this. How does allowance fit into the meditation practice and its trajectory towards the unconditioned? Well, allowance is letting the mind be as it is without interference. Just not denying any aspect of the mind and not trying to create something different than what is actually occurring. It's taking ourselves out of the meditation. It's allowing the mind to sort itself out. Now, you might want to try that on some meditation. Okay, I'm not going to do a thing in my meditation. If I fall asleep, I fall asleep. If I get lost in thought, I get lost in thought. I'm not going to try to get back out of thought. I'm not going to try to think either. I'm just going to let the mind do what it does. And if we're sufficiently willing to release ourselves from our meditation, then awareness will see every aspect of what's occurring during that meditation. But it won't see it from a sense of the mind, because the mind is what is being seen in the totality of that meditation. Just allow the mind to be what it is. As soon as you allow the mind to be what it is, there's no struggle in the mind. There's no one part of the mind struggling against another part of the mind. So what was fractured before when there was this struggle is now whole without the struggle. The whole mind, the unified mind, can easily be seen by awareness because it's not trying to capture our attention by some substitute judgment. So that's allowance. So there's observation. So you can see why I waited for the afternoon to tell you, because it's a little involved. But again, we can start moving our practice towards these absolute unconditioned ways just by giving ourselves a challenge. Okay, what's it like just to let the mind be what it is? I'm going to sit, and for this period of time, I'm not going to try to control the mind. I'm not going to bring it back to the breath. I'm not going to bring it back anywhere. I'm just going to let the mind be the mind. And I'm not going to judge or criticize it. I'm not going to fight against it or struggle with whatever happens. I may be lost in thought the entire time. So be it. I'm just going to do it. And then see what comes from that. And you might be surprised. And with the allowance, of course, comes the observation. Because allowance and observation are really one and the same thing. Knowing that awareness never tries to manipulate what it sees. That's allowance. And that's also observation. So it all these things start coming together in ways that are very, very helpful when you give yourself room to experiment, to move this thing forward, to ask questions about it, to say, okay, my observations are only partial. I want to see everything. I want to see without commentary, you see? Now, let me give you a way to be able to do that in practical terms. Listening is a tremendous way to start moving towards total allowance. So you want to listen to someone, especially if you're in a listening field of like a therapist or a chaplain or anytime you're listening to somebody and really being present with them, you'll notice that the same problems that come in your meditation come in your listening. The person will say something and you'll have a judgment about it, and the judgment, you'll get lost in the narrative about the judgment and you won't be listening. Or you'll think about something that's going on in you, and that will pull your listening into a sort of a self-absorbed way, and you won't be listening. But if you just try to listen to someone and be ready to release, again, these are, right, playing to not, be willing to release, to surrender all the noise that surrounds that listening, that is meditation without influence. That is the ability, and you have an object there. You have the person, your friend, hopefully, that you're connected with enough, or maybe a spouse, that you want to listen to them. And this is the key point, is that the motivation to listen is there when you are with a loved one or a dear friend, and you're trying to empathize with whatever it is that they're saying. So you're not fighting against yourself, trying to listen to your own mind and being bored with your own mind and being tired or irritated by your own mind, because your own mind isn't a friend to you. Start with somebody who is a friend with you. And then you can start connecting beyond the words that arise with that friendship. And you can begin to see the similarities, the exactness of listening and awareness, because listening is awareness. Seeing is awareness. Not what you see, but the fact of seeing is awareness. Listening, not what you listen to, not the story, but the listening itself is awareness. And so the less involved you are in the mind's reaction to that listening, you're releasing all that, the more the purity of the listening is. And there's a sense of really joining with that person. And probably most of you, or many of you, have had that experience of deep listening, where you really join with the person who's speaking in a way that your time passes without effort, without clock. It's really beautiful to see. And so I encourage you to use something as easy or as accessible as listening. Listening isn't easy, but it's accessible, and join your meditation practice off the cushion with this sense of wanting to expand your ability to listen clearly and purely without influence. Okay. So those are early instructions again that I'm trying to direct beyond self-care into the worlds of the formless, as opposed to the forms. It's amazing how we can, awareness is everywhere, and we are only aware of what awareness sees. We're aware of, you know, our body, because awareness sees it. We're aware of the desk. We're aware of the forms and formations of the world. But we're not aware of what it is that's seeing those things, because we don't care about the seeing, we care about the formation. We care about how this computer screen in front of me can serve me, and how much money I pay for it, and all of that. And so the seeing of it is bypassed, where the seeing is everything. Look around. It's ubiquitous. It's everything. And so you can see why the Buddha wanted to dampen our enthusiasm to form, because if we're so enthusiastic about our form, we're going to miss the seeing, the formless. Who cares about seeing the computer? It's the computer that I want, you see? And so you begin to see the logic, the spiritual logic, of how the Buddha unfolded the path and how he then highlighted what was important on this thing, the formlessness. That is where the spirit lies. That is why we don't find the spirit so easily, because we keep assuming the spirit is in the cross, the Christian cross, or the Buddha statue, or the resemblances of the spirit. Those formations that we, you know, the body of Christ and Mother Mary, and those formations which bring something more out of us when we see them, but they're still formations. Meanwhile, the spirit is everywhere. It is the seeing. The spirit is the seeing. It's just that we get so confused about the seeing as opposed to what we're seeing. Okay, so I just want to give you that introduction because it's so important. And when you're moving this practice forward, you don't want to get stuck. You don't want to do it halfway. I remember early on in my, I was probably one of the first years I got involved in a spiritual journey. I was listening to some Swami, somebody, and the Swami said, okay, now I'm going to open this up and anyone who would like can come up and join me on this mat and have a transcendent awareness. So there's a large audience and he stops for a minute. Nobody comes up. So I'm listening to this or seeing it or something. And I said, by God, I'd go. I mean, not that he could do it, but he was making a point that nobody wants it. Here I'm offering you something and nobody's coming up here. I don't know what he would have done if somebody had come up there because this isn't transferable. It's not something that a sage can give you unless you're ready and open to receiving it. But in my mind, I wasn't going to be halfway on this thing. I wasn't going to do my spiritual journey halfway and just be content, you know, with a little bit of freedom. I want the whole thing, or, you know, it's useless. It's a little bit like learning a language, a spiritual journey. And what I mean by that is, you know, people learn a language that's not their own, a second language, until they see that people around them can understand them sufficiently for them to get what they want out of that language. And then they stop learning. Many cases, from a person who's completely fluent to somebody who's learning it as a second language, you can feel where they stop, where there was sufficient communication, where they no longer wanted to learn the way they had to learn to become sufficient in their communication. Well, that's the same as spirituality. And if it's, we'll move this thing until we become personally satisfied, until we become satiated enough with how it's working for us in our life so that we don't really want to go move it any further. Well, fine. That's fine. You can stop it wherever you wish, but there's so much more. And I don't know how to communicate that, the range of what's available, except by sharing from time to time ways that we inhibit ourselves from moving further on. And so just take this for what it is, it's an encouragement for all of us to move this thing beyond what we might think is our limitations. Okay, so those are some of the challenges of meditation. I want to just talk a little bit more about the challenges of meditation. Like I was mentioning this morning about sitting down and being quiet. And why is that so hard to do? What's the challenge behind sitting down and being quiet? Well, what is it? We don't give any value to sitting down and being quiet. That's not where the sense of me puts any worth in doing nothing. In fact, you can hear your mother's voice in there, or a parent or grown up saying, I could see that you were never going to be any good at, you're always going to be worthless. You're never going to be, you know, all that kind of stuff, that those adjectives that are thrown on us when we are being lazy. And now we are sitting down intentionally and not doing anything. And those old inscribed values of doing nothing just begin to weigh on us. I'm not doing anything, you see, because what we have learned as we grew up in this culture is that only the productive people are worthwhile. You have to be productive. You have to have go out and accomplish and create and do and learn and all of that. Now you're being productive, and that's where you get rewarded in this culture. Sitting down and being quiet produces none of that. No one can see a thing that you have done in the last 45 minutes. And so the lack of productivity begins to weigh, or can weigh very strongly against sitting down and being quiet. So you have to, you see, these are the way, the counter forces of the Dharma are the cultural, intuitive, accepted ways that we believe in values that are not, or that are adharmic. There is value in doing nothing. There is value in sitting down and being quiet. Another whole perspective of life comes forth. Wisdom is only accessible from quietude. But if I keep weighing in about how worthless I am and what I should be doing instead of meditating, I'm going to be sitting there agitated, impatient, and counting the minutes as they go by, thinking I'm meditating. Useless. You might as well get up and do what you thought you needed to do before you started meditating. So that's a challenge that we're all going to have to face. Okay, another one. Attention versus description. Well, if I'm describing something, I'm learning about it. You know, I'm growing with it. I'm creating new thoughts about it. I'm learning. But attention without description robs me of that knowing, of that history with it, of the memories associated with it. What good is that? What good is attention without the description? Well, if we stop there, which many of us do, and we just get used to more subtle descriptions within our attention, then we're going to be held within the descriptive field, which is the formed field of life. Attention without description frees the formlessness up. Now we begin to understand what lies on the other side of knowing. Description only takes us to what we know. What lies on the other side of that knowing? That, again, is where the unconditioned lies. It lies in on the other side of knowing. What's the other side of knowing? Da-da-da-da. Wonder. Wonder is on the other side of knowing. The inexplicable is on the other side of knowing. The inconceivable is on the other side. Why is it inconceivable? Because we don't know it. We're willing to release the need to know. And that opens the whole field up to the wonder that is everywhere. So that's another challenge of meditation, but we're never going to go there if we get stay within the constraints of what the, in the context of what the culture describes as valuable. Now, one final one here. There's a, especially in the West, there is a restlessness of spirit. And you might have found it within your, it's certainly one of the hindrances, but it's one of the hindrances that I think that are the most destructive. Because wherever we land, we aren't comfortable there. We have, especially in the affluence of our culture, we need to tweak the present to make it a comfortable present. And this isn't the right location. I should be somewhere else, or I should have something else happening in this one to make it the right location, or I need something extracted so that it will be more comfortably what it is. And so the true location, even though our body has landed in our meditation, there's a struggle that's associated with whatever location we're in. And I call that restlessness, because wherever we are, we want to be somewhere else. Or we're, even if we want to be there, we want it with extra provisions. And we want it with a little more heat, or a little with a cool wind or something. And so it's this perpetual restlessness of location that can create the turbulence that never allows us to settle sufficiently to see. And we're not willing to see that what we're thinking about, which is a different location, is the problem. So we never put together the fact that wanting a different location and the struggle we're feeling are one and the same events. We think, well, this is just restlessness arising. Well, just restlessness arising because of what? Because we are struggling with the location we're in. You see, unless we take the problem head on, face it head on, okay, I want to know what's going on in me, period. I feel a restlessness. Well, I think I should be doing something else, because I should be productive instead of just sitting here. That's one of the ways I want to relocate in my forms and in my activities and in my usefulness. But also, it's too warm in here, or my knee hurts. And he says not to move. That means I have to tolerate, which is not acceptance, which is not release, which is not surrender. It's resistance, submerged resistance, pretended, covered over to make it look as if you're tranquil, but you're not. And so I want to know, I want to get to the bottom. I want to go all the way down and see what it is that's the system's loaded, why this location is causing such disturbance and difficulty. And from below it, that which holds it, you can see that. From above it, you blame it on whatever above it, me, and my inability to meditate, or all of that. So just take whatever you're feeling during the meditation, take it all the way down to the root base. See what's there, to the absolute stillness of the moment. And the stillness will show you, because that's what stillness does, it sees everything. It will show you the truth of why it is that you can't settle. And it will surprise you. I'm thinking about whether I should say the last one. I don't think I'm going to. I'll save it for the next Dharma talk I do at some time or other, because I've given you a lot today. And I'm just hoping that you followed me at least partially on this. I always think that people's motivations are the same as mine, even though I've taught for 40 years, I tend to think that people have the same desire to know themselves, which probably isn't true. But in any case, so I try to give you what might be helpful for you to take the next step in your own journey. Now, I'm 74, and every time, every day, every single day, it's a new experience for me. I will not settle for yesterday at 74 to cover over and diminish the access, the access to spirit. And that's what you have to be, that committed to the spiritual journey, or it just becomes a conditioned experience in you. You've worked it like a language. You've worked it up to a certain point. You've settled now into a certain relationship with it that's serving and helpful, and now you're a more decent person, and that's enough. And yet, to a fluent, somebody who's fluent in the language of the spiritual journey, can see that it's not. It's not the complete story. And what I want from you, what I wish for you, not want for you, what I wish for you is to live within that complete story. Okay. Thank you.